This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 66 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
And I'm Chris.
And Katie is out this week. She is moving, but we have a temporary replacement. We took our Katie and we turned her into a Kate. We have Kate Donnelly with us from Hipsters of the Coast. Hello.
Hi guys, thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm so excited to be here, you have no idea.
It's funny you mention that because, you know, we've read your articles before, which we'll talk about a little later, but you had actually tweeted us and said that you were a super fan of the show. And then we kind of kept your name in the back of our minds. And then we were looking for somebody to be a guest. And I was like, how about Kate Donnelly? And you said yes.
Yeah. I mean, the minute you messaged me, I got super excited. There aren't a lot of women who play near me. So when I need some like magic, awesome lady time, I throw the cast on. It's my go-to listening on my way to work, and I'm beyond excited to be on here. It's like, you know, your favorite TV shows, like, hey guys, you want to be on it?
So for those who don't know who you are, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the column that you write for at Hipsters?
So for people who don't know me, I write the Hope Eternal column for Hipsters of the Coast. I cover mostly legacy, but I also talk about modern. I've covered pauper, vintage, also anything related to altering or being a woman in magic. I kind of cover anything related to eternal, so I jump all over. I also alter cards, and I work for an LGS. It's pretty well known in the New England area. It's That's Entertainment. So I'm a little all over the place, but my main format is legacy. I've been playing for a few years, and I'm badly addicted.
Now, when did you start playing Magic, Kate?
So I used to live in New York City, and when I left, I got a job in Central Massachusetts. And the only person I knew there was a friend from high school, and he was playing Magic a lot, and I told him he was a loser who was never going to have any friends. and I spent the whole summer making fun of him, and he was like, listen, like, if you're going to make fun of me this much, that's fine, but you got to give it a chance. And I did, and here I am a few years later, and it's my whole life. and his friends mostly played EDH and Legacy, so they started teaching me Legacy, and I just fell in love with it, started going with them to our store every week. And then I met my now fiance at Legacy, and between me and him, it's pretty much all I do all the time is play Magic or buy Magic cards or sell Magic cards or, you know, run F&Ms.
And why Legacy?
I love that I don't have to buy new cards every few months. That's a big go-to for me. That was the format my friends were playing, so I learned backwards. You know, most people learn like from Standard and then they save up for Modern and then they save up for Legacy. But honestly, like, I started in Legacy and EDH and then I played Modern and then I played Standard, like, no joke. So I got really used to the wonderful power level that you have in Legacy without having to invest in a whole new set of cards every 6 months was really appealing. I fell in love with Mud Post pretty quickly. And have since then continued to play post decks. I do still play Modern when I can. There isn't a lot of great Modern support in my area, ironically, but there is great Legacy support. So I stick with Legacy mostly. I love the power level. I love casting. I've cast Emrakul on like turn three with post, and I just, how can you not love that? Like, who says no to that? For people unfamiliar with the card Cloud Post, it taps for one for every land that is a locust type in play. So Cloud Post, it comes in tapped. It's a locust land. Glimmer Post comes in untapped. It only taps for one, and it is a locust land, but you gain one life for each locust land in play when it comes in. And then you also run Vesuva, so you can copy either one. So it's 12 posts because you're kind of running 12 post lands. So you can, you know, make a lot of mana very quickly. So it's a little bit stronger than Tron, but also a heck of a lot more consistent, but just as fun.
Is it more affordable? I know Chris was interested in buying lands, but those damn tabernacles were, what, $1,500 apiece?
Yeah.
Tabernacles about $750 for an Italian right now. Which Aaron and I are very fortunate that we've had one for quite some time before the spike went really crazy. Mud Post, which was my very first Legacy deck, is actually one of the more affordable ones. I say that it's a, probably around $1,000. but for... If you think about it, though, that's two standard decks, and, you know, it won't rotate out. I love Mud Post. I've written a lot of articles about it. The downside of Mud Post is the deck loses to itself a lot. It doesn't have a lot of draw, which in Legacy is obviously really important. Everyone knows, like, Legacy equals Brainstorm, right? So, like, when you're not running a lot of card draw, that can be really tough. I'm currently running Mono Green Post, which has a Tabernacle in it, so it's a little bit more expensive. But honestly, Post can be one of the more affordable decks. That's how I got into Legacy. I'm actually in the process of designing a Metalworker tattoo, which is one of the main cards in the deck, because Mud Post means that much to me. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're interested in Legacy, don't want to spend a ton of money, you love Tron-style decks in Modern or anything that like ramps you up really fast. Mud Post is a great deck, and for Legacy, it's fairly affordable, and none of the cards are like bad investments. Money-wise, they're great things like Metalworker and Grim Monolith. There's no blue duels, so you're not spending $250 on a card. Most of the really pricey cards are, you know, $30-$50 each. The only really pricey ones in there is it does run a couple City of Traders and it does run a few Cavern of Souls.
One of the questions we like to ask women who come on the show is, what has your experience been like as a lady Magic player?
Well, I'm sure a few people know me from my article that came out, was it last year? Yeah, last year, called The View From Here, where I talked about my negative experiences as a female Magic player. I have to say it's very hit and miss, whether it's positive or negative. I love Magic. You're not going to see me going anywhere. But I've definitely had some really awful, awful experiences if you've read the article. If not, I'm a little biased, but I think it's worth a read. on the same note, though, I obviously think there's a lot of great sides to Magic. I met my fiance at Magic. I got my job through Magic. I work in an LGS. It's the best job I've ever had, and I never want to leave. I write for a blog. I try to get on podcasts whenever I can. I really do love it. I think there's a lot of positive sides to it, but I think at the same time, there is a lot of room for improvement for where women stand in terms of the community.
So let's go ahead and dive into that. So there were two articles that recently came out. The first one was written by our friend Anastasia Thompson. Side note, I just picked up Anastasia's book, Always Anastasia. So if you're interested in reading a good memoir from a trans person, I highly recommend it. It's a poignant read. I'm really enjoying it. She wrote an article called Diversity in Magic the Gathering, where she introduces herself. She reminds people that she's a level 3 judge, and she kind of talks about her experience as a trans woman in Magic, and specifically as a trans woman after some recent events that have happened that are very troubling to the LGBT community. I think she worded things quite well, and she kind of illustrates what we need to do to go forward. Chris, what did you think about Anastasia's post?
I really enjoyed it. I really like reading her writing, and I was really happy that she mentioned how supportive her judge community was to her, and that most of her concern when she first started transitioning was how the Magic community overall was going to be receptive to her. And I liked that she was very assertive about her feelings, about how people, you know, would talk to her or treat other people, and that she wasn't going to back down. She wasn't going to take, you know, people's negative comments toward her or any of their bullshit. And so I can definitely appreciate that. You know, people talk about people in the LGBTQ community being, you know, brave. And really, I think if you're going to put yourself in a position where people could potentially harm you or try to destroy your reputation because you want to be the person that you were meant to be, I really think that is a brave thing. And so I give her a lot of props for doing that. And I appreciate that she pointed out that people, you know, in Magic, in any community, they want to be in a place where they feel safe and not be judged and not, you know, and for her, she's concerned about people, you know, fetishizing her because she's trans and things like that. And I think that that's important. You know, when she said the part about what happened at the Pulse nightclub, I'm not going to lie. I've had thoughts about what if someone like lost their shit at like a Magic tournament and wanted to hurt a bunch of people. And I would like to think that things like that would never, ever happen in our community. But sometimes it's in the back of my mind. And I like to think that our community is a safe place for people and that, you know, we are stronger together than apart. And I feel like we need to be focusing on why our differences are important and special and not why they should drive us away from one another. And I just encourage everyone to be wonderful and awesome to each other. And I think that her article is definitely a starting place for people that might not understand, you know, what someone might go through when they're, you know, trying to come out or transition or any of those things, and try to realize that even though we are different in many ways, we do struggle with certain things, even though they're different, very similarly. And I think that would be a really important thing for people to read, especially if they're going through something similar.
Well said, Chris.
Thanks. Yeah. And Hallie, you get to follow that up.
Yeah. My bad. I have to follow that up. No, it's good. I agreed with so much of what Chris said. And I thought, you know, Anastasia's article had a very positive message that, you know, people in the trans community who are also part of the Magic community just want to be part of the Magic community just like everyone else. They're not there to, you know, hurt anyone or impose anything. They just want to play Magic and be treated like everyone else. And, you know, it was really great to see that her community was accepting of her. And I was really struck by how many times in the article she said it wasn't the end of the world when she came out, and that her community did accept her. And I hope that this encourages other people who might be afraid of how their communities are going to react to them to come out and live their own authentic lives through playing Magic.
I agree with that. I have to follow both of those up. I think what everyone said is, I mean, so on point. I think that all, I think it's so crazy when people aren't super accepting of new players, because who doesn't want a big, strong Magic community? So how she ended the article with that line of, I just want to sit down and play or judge the game that I love, like, really sunk in with me, because that's all I've ever asked. So I thought it was such a strong, beautiful message. And I hope it really resonated with people, because, I mean, how can anyone not relate to that? That's all we want, right? I mean, who doesn't agree that we just want to sit down and play this awesome game, and we want the most people to play it so it's super successful for ever and ever, because I can't live without it.
I related to, there was a portion in Anastasia's post where she says, I was about to paint a bullseye on my own back as I prepared to step from the realm of the privileged, though that privilege had often been pretty painful because of my dysphoria, into that of the othered and the oppressed. And that reminded me of when I played World of Warcraft. I'd been blogging about WoW for many years, and I wasn't out. Like, I had a successful blog, I had a successful podcast, but nobody knew that I was trans. I was very closeted at the time, and I was actually outed. I didn't choose to come out. And so I was outed, but at the same time I was going to anyways, or like I had been outed, but I chose to, you know, sort of like a hole in your jeans, when you have like the hole in your jeans and you just decide to rip it open. Like, somebody had outed me and like a couple people knew, and then I decided to like make sure everybody knew. And part of the reason that I did that was because of the privilege factor. You know, I was getting emails from kids who were trans and saying, we see that you're really queer friendly, I feel like I can come to you. And I was so busy trying to keep my privilege and so busy trying to keep my cushy life that I wasn't helping these people. And eventually I realized that I'm exactly in a position to do that, and that if I have to give up, if I have to put that bullseye on my back to do some good, then I'm willing to do that. And so I wrote a coming out post, which I linked to every National Coming Out Day, and basically just put myself out there, because I knew that, you know, I just couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't sit in this really privileged position and watch people around me suffer that I had the that I could possibly help. And so I really related to Anastasia when she said that she willingly put that on her own back, because I did that too. And it came out okay. You know, I have not had to, I wrote that post, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I retweet it every year, and I have never received a single negative comment on it. Like, even when I came out, I got like 90 comments right off the bat, and all of them were positive. Like, I had that thing locked down, moderation on, and it wasn't that bad. And so Anastasia's saying, I did this thing and it's not the end of the world, that's exactly how my experience was too. There was another article that came out. It was actually an interview with a young lady named Melissa Lee. She works in the story. I believe she's a story designer or a story. She works, she's on their magic story team. She did an interview with a website called The Establishment, and they basically interviewed her about what it's like to be a female gamer and what it's like to work with Wizards of the Coast. Kate, I know you had some opinions on this one, so why don't you kick us off?
I do. First off, I think it's a great article. Melissa seems really awesome, and I was really happy to read about how she felt. I did have some negative opinions of it, not because of what she said. I think she seems awesome, and I was really happy reading the article and reading about how a female employee of Wizards felt about things. It just almost seemed too positive, which seems like a really weird complaint, but I feel like in my everyday life as a female legacy player, some of my hardest moments have been, you know, talking to people about the issues I face, and they'll be like, oh, well, so-and-so said this, so obviously there aren't any issues. And this just seemed so positive that it came off as another thing that someone was going to point to of, see, everything's fine. And that was my only worry reading the whole article is, oh my gosh, people are going to use this as an argument that everything's wonderful all the time, because it was just so positive about where women in Magic have come. And I'm not saying there haven't been awesome improvements, but it's definitely not where it needs to be. So that was my only disappointment, but I really did enjoy reading about her job and how she loved it. I think that's great. It's been really cool to read.
I really enjoyed it too. I liked how she pointed out how well she felt that the cards in Shadows of Innistrad and Eldritch Moon were reflecting the story so well. And I can definitely agree with that, because they kind of have like an immersive feel to them. Like, more than Theros, more than Ravnica, like, they just feel like you really are part of the story. And so I really liked how she pointed that out. And I also enjoyed how she talks about the importance of role-playing and playing other games, and how it gives someone a perspective about what life must be like for another person. And I think that that's a really important thing. I wish that I had discovered role-playing games and Magic when I was a lot younger. My dealings with Magic were so brief when I was, you know, a kid, that I wish that I could have had those experiences, because maybe, and not to say that I don't, but perhaps I would be able to empathize with people more than I already do, because I think that is a good way for people perhaps to learn empathy, or learn to, you know, see things outside of the world and, you know, the experiences that they know. And so it was very interesting to have her point that out. I liked how she pointed out that ladies can be in control of their sexuality. They don't need to have someone pointing that out. And I was like, sitting at work, I'm like, hands raised. I'm like, I love it. I'm like, this is great. And they're just like, they just look sexy because they're doing their thing and they're not trying to impress anyone. And I'm like, that's how I feel. Damn straight. And I also really was pleased to hear her say that she feels that it's harder for people to dehumanize other people, or her or anyone, if they're right in front of them, because people probably are less likely to say something directly to your face, as opposed to, you know, people on Twitch maybe saying mean comments, or people on the internet just being people on the internet. And that's a very, you know, interesting thing, I think, to point out. I haven't had too many comments said to me. Again, maybe I look intimidating, not sure. But I would really hope that people haven't had to deal with a lot of negative experiences directly to their face. Or if they have, I hope that they've either told someone that it bothered them or stood up for themselves. Me, I don't take any bullshit. So if someone if someone had said something to me, it would have been like, shoot something back, judge, what's up? So, you know, and I really also appreciated her emphasis on the community, because everyone knows how much I heart the community, and I like cool people in the community. I don't like D-bags or people that are mean to other people, so don't be that person. So I really enjoyed a lot.
Can you come hang out at my LGS? Like, please and thank you.
Oh,
I feel like I need
to.
Your, like, awesome woman powers.
Oh, that would be, oh my god, I would love that.
Kate, yes, you can hire Chris as a bouncer and pay her in a tabernacle. How about that?
Oh, yeah, I think Aaron would leave me on if I traded away our tabernacle, but I can pay you an awesome eyeliner and eyebrow skills.
I am totally fine with this. I will do trades in makeup. I will do it.
Oh, man, you are talking with the right girl.
Well, I also really liked the article. I was glad that Mel had a lot of positive things to say, at least from her perspective, like inside of Wizards. It's great to see that, you know, the culture within Wizards is so positive and with such an emphasis on feminism. Like, it seemed really great. The one, I guess, quibble that I had with this article was that it obviously is an interview. There was an author who was interviewing Mel about this, and it seemed like they had a bit of a disconnect about like how they viewed the magic community. I got the sense that the writer doesn't really play magic very much, or was only familiar with magic because she knows people who plays or is related to people who play. And it seemed like she couldn't see and how female-friendly magic was becoming until it was brought to her attention. And, you know, for those of us, I guess, on the inside, so to speak, those of us who are enfranchised players who play magic regularly, we can sort of see the trajectory. Like, we can see how female-friendly magic is becoming and how inclusive and diverse magic is becoming. But I worry that, you know, that isn't trickling down to the wider culture just yet, that the culture is, you know, mainstream media is still seeing magic as a boys' club, and I hope that we can continue to work to change that perception.
Could I add something to that? Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure.
I'm wondering, I'm, like, listening to you guys, and you guys mostly play Standard and Modern, from what I understand, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of Legacy support in Milwaukee, but I was a GP Columbus, so I try to get up to a Legacy GP or an Open when I can.
So I'm wondering, so my main format is Legacy, right? And my secondary is Modern, and I also, like, do Draft and Sealed. But I feel like I have such a different perspective from you guys about women and magic, and I'm really wondering if that is format related. And I'm literally feel like I'm having an epiphany right here, because you guys are talking about, like, how you feel like how much more diverse it is. But, like, for me, you know, it's been 3 or 4 years I've been playing Magic, and I'm still, you know, the only woman I know who plays Legacy. Like, the only other woman I've ever met is Feline, and also Nicole Callahan, who I don't know if you guys know. She's Jim Davis's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've met her a couple times. And those are really the only women besides Jackie I've seen at tournaments more than once. So for me, like, the way women are treated and how many there are of them and how diverse it is, I feel like I have such a different perspective. And it's so interesting listening to you guys, because for me, I still feel like I'm really struggling most of the time. Even when I run FNMs once in a blue moon, not super often. And when I run them, there's almost no women there ever. I'm wondering how regional and how format related this is, because I feel like I'm in a different world. I'm like, where are you guys? I want to be there. I want to be there so bad. I just want that. That's what I want. So yeah, this is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I've ever played Magic in New England. I've lived in New England, but I wasn't aware of Magic when I lived there, so maybe that's telling. But I mean, it could be region specific. It's also just that, you know, we do have a long way to go.
For sure.
I've definitely seen more women at GPs in the last few years than I've seen previously. I mean, I started playing maybe 4 years ago, and at the time, there weren't a lot of women at GPs. And now when I go, I see, you know, 2 or 3 women at every long table. Like, that's really striking to me. And I see more women in the side events area. But those are, like you said, mostly limited GPs, mostly standard GPs that have a lower barrier to entry than something like Legacy or Modern. So it could be format specific, and it could be regional too.
And it's not, like, even outside of, like, the price constraints, that Legacy isn't more intimidating. Like, I obviously there's like a very different demographic stretch outside of gender when it comes to legacy versus standard versus modern. So I personally think legacy is more intimidating from a player's perspective of how hard it is and from a demographic perspective, but it's just so interesting to start thinking about. I've never really put much thought into the demographic breakdown of how welcome I feel. Like, I've always known more women play standard than legacy. Like, that's very, very obvious, but I've never put a lot of thought in whether those women felt more welcome than I do. And hearing that, I've been hearing from a lot of women recently who also play, like, oh yeah, like, I, like, it's not perfect. Obviously, there's still a lot more to go, but like, I've been feeling a lot better, where I'm like sitting over here in like my little lonely corner with my cloud posts and my force of wills going, what? I want this.
Well, I mean, I've been intimidated by legacy. Like, but I think it has to do more with the deck that I play, where it's like, you know, legacy is these revered, you know, epic, you know, eternal archetypes, where like, you know, Mud is one of them. Shardless Bug is another one. Miracles is another one. And here I'm rolling up with my now $1,000 Dredge deck, you know, and so,
whoa,
you know, when I.
Give yourself some credit.
Well, I know that, but what I'm saying, you know, but what I'm saying though is I feel inadequate, where it's like these are these expensive, these epic strategies, and here I'm rolling in with my reviled deck that people don't like. And it's actually part of the reason I didn't go to Eternal Weekend. I had an offer to come to Eternal Weekend in October. Somebody offered to loan me the Bazaars. They were like, if you come to Eternal Weekend, we'll give you Bazaars and for the weekend and you can play Vintage. And part of the reason I didn't go was because I didn't feel good enough, because you're literally playing Magic. This is the best way I can describe this, and hopefully this doesn't come out the wrong way. You're literally playing Magic with the biggest dicks in the room, in a good way. But you know what I mean, though? Like, people are showing up with $5,000 decks, $6,000, $7,000 decks, right? And here I come. I've never played the format. I don't know what these cards do, and I'm just sitting here, and I felt not worthy. Where it's like, here I come rolling in. I'm primarily a modern player. I didn't want to be the girl that was like, what does this card do? What does this strategy do? And I was like, I didn't want to. Nobody made me feel that way. Like, I'm not saying that anybody put that pressure on me, but it was me going, I'm gonna go in the room with these, you know, Grandpa Belcher and Steven, I can't think of his name, but he's really popular, and just all these names that I've seen, and I'm not worthy. And so part of the reason that I didn't go was because I just didn't want to feel like the new kid on the block. Like, I wanted to wait until I had some more practice. And so, you know, that has nothing necessarily to do with gender, but I can understand that feeling of you're with these huge, crazy, expensive, powerful decks, and let's say you did just buy another format, and you either don't know what your deck does or what their deck does, or your deck didn't cost as much. I can definitely relate to those feelings of I'm not good enough to be here.
Well, yeah. I feel like I have some much needed advice for everybody who wants to play Legacy, and then some specific Aaron advice. First, the Aaron advice. Dredge is definitely a revered and feared Legacy deck, and especially in Vintage, so you should rock it. I played Dredge twice at SCG Worcester Boston, whatever they called it this year. By the way, SCG Worcester Boston, different towns. just want to throw that out there. But it's seriously, like, I played it twice. It was two. It's an easier matchup for me because I run mainboard bog and crop rotation, which is kind of like an F you to Dredge. Sorry, Aaron.
Rude.
but it's definitely a major archetype. I feel like I play against it at every single, you know, big event I go to. So don't be afraid of Dredge. But to everyone else, like, the thing I think that made me a good Legacy player was from day one, I didn't understand how much cards were for a super long time. Don't ever tell my boss, because now I buy them for our company for a living. but you have to forget that these decks are super expensive. You have to forget that this room is full of cocky assholes. And you just have to sit down and want to play like you do in any other format. To be frank, like, people put in weird cards in Legacy all the time. I'm one of them. I'm playing Mono Green Post right now, and I just jammed through with Grapple from the Past, the new common from Eldritch Moon, in my main board. And, you know, everyone had to read that card. People who have been playing Legacy for years, like, people walk in the room with weird cards all the time. Don't be ashamed to read the cards. Don't be ashamed to call a judge. Like, I think I had like four or five judge calls when I went through SCG Worcester. And it's not because I don't know Legacy. I know Legacy very, very well. It's because Legacy is a weird format with a lot of weird interactions, and it's better to double check than not. So don't be afraid. Like, Legacy players, we want you. we really do. Like, we want more Legacy players. We want more support. Like, I live in New England where Legacy is thriving. I could play 3-4 days a week if I had the time and the money.
Wow.
I know, isn't it beautiful? But, like, seriously, we want, and I live here, and, like, we still want more people to play. Like, we love new Legacy players. There is not any Legacy player who doesn't want to welcome new Legacy players isn't a real Legacy player. They're fraud. Don't worry about them. Like, forget about them. They're not worth your time. So if you want to play, don't be intimidated. It's a great format. Yes, it's very expensive to get into, but once you've bought a deck you love, you're in. You're done. You might buy a couple sideboard cards here or there, but you're in and you're finished. And that's the best part of the format. You're not spending $500 every 3-4 months getting a new deck. So if you want to play, play. Don't be afraid. I know it's kind of scary, but when you get scared, just tweet at me and I'll send you, like, awesome emoticons and selfies and everything will be fine again. Because it's the best format. I really want to make everyone fall in love with Legacy and not be scared. Because I know it's, like, a big jump. And I got lucky that my friends are assholes who are like, oh, we're not going to teach you Standard. We're going to push you straight into Legacy and not let you know that Standard exists. Because my friends are masochistic assholes. But, like, find your masochistic asshole friend to have them push you off that cliff, because it's totally worth it.
Can I ask another question on behalf of new Legacy players or prospective new Legacy players?
Please do.
So we talked about the fact that, you know, the price of decks can be intimidating. One of the things that intimidates me about Legacy is that a lot of practice goes into playing your deck. And I think the biggest thing for me to get past sometimes when I want to sign up for a Legacy tournament is I'm going to be paying an entry fee to lose, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I play Delver, and I've played it, you know, a couple dozen times, and I lose with it all the time because it's so complicated to play. What would you say to people who are trying to make that leap and are intimidated going into a room full of people who know their decks way better than you know yours?
So I will not lie. Like, I'd probably say it depends on your deck. 30 to 70% of Legacy is knowing your opponent's deck. And I know that's a really big field, but if you're playing, you know, a deck like Mudpost, like, half the time it doesn't matter what your opponent's doing. You're just sitting there doing your thing. But if you're playing a deck like Miracles and you don't know what your opponent's doing, like, you're done fucked. Right? So it is definitely really hard, because I'm sure you sit down and you're like, I'm going to spend the next 6 months losing. Like, a lot of it is gold fishing, practicing your hard matchups. You do lose for a while. I'm not going to pretend that most people are going to walk in the door and start winning right away. I can say it's worth the practice, and you're going to start winning sooner than you think you are. It only took me 2 or 3 months of grinding before, and not hard grinding. I mean, like, playing at my LGS once or twice a week, and then sitting at home playing with friends a couple days a week, before I started getting, you know, top four at my LGS. And my first two SCGs, I think I placed, like, 40th and 42nd out of, like, 400 people, right? 300-400 people. So it's not impossible to do well quickly. You definitely have to put a lot of time and effort in, but don't you have to do that with every format? Like, I know Legacy comes off as really intimidating and really hard, and I'm not going to pretend, like, the interactions are really easy. Like, I know now, like, someone asked me what happens when there's a chain of Mephistopheles and a Sylvan Library on the table. And, nope. Like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, no problem. But, like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, what? Like, I know that it's scary and intimidating, but it's like every other format. To be frank, like, when people give me judge calls when I have to, like, run FNM on Standard shit, I'm like, oh, what the fuck? What is this shit? It's the same thing. It just seems scary. It's like, you know, when you're a little kid and, like, something seems really big and intimidating, and then you grow up and you do it and you're like, why the fuck was this scary? That's Legacy. That's Legacy. Yeah, you're going to lose for a little bit, and it's going to be really shitty for a couple months. But it's that way when you're learning Magic in general. And, I mean, when you move into any new format, it's hard like that. I know when I moved into Modern, I did super shitty for a couple months. When I moved into Standard, I did shitty for a couple months. That's just how it is when you learn a new format. But it's worth the effort because long term, you're going to have another format you enjoy. It's going to be a deck you get to keep and not have to reinvest into every few months. So I say stick with it, just like I say with any other format. I have new kids coming in all the time wanting to learn Magic, and they'll go to FNM and they'll lose for like 2 months straight. And they'll be like, Kate Donnelly, why did you think this was a good idea? Like, why did you let me buy into this stupid game? I suck. And then they'll come to me a month later and they'll be like, I just got first place. And I'll be like, see, you stuck with it and you practiced and it was worth it. And that's what I say about Legacy too.
I do think it's interesting. You know, you mentioned Legacy is about knowing what your opponent's doing, and that's so different than Modern. You know, one of the things that we're consistently told in Modern is play what you know. It's all about knowing your deck inside out. And it's interesting the dichotomy, whereas and I agree with you that Legacy is more about knowing what your opponent's doing, whereas Modern is really knowing what you're doing. And I mean, you have to know your deck in Legacy, but I feel like in Legacy, there's so much more incentive to know what your opponent is doing. Like, I really like that you worded it that way.
Oh, definitely. Like, if you, I mean, Miracles is 20% of the meta right now, and that's like something that can't be ignored. I'm sorry, 19% if you ask MTG Top 8. but, you know, it's really important to know if you're playing against Miracles where they're going to be just force of willing everything you do, or you're going to be playing against Storm, which is going to be trying to win in the first three turns, or if you're going to be trying to play against, you know, Grixis Delver. Every single one interacts very differently. There's a couple amazing articles out there about how to figure out what your opponent's playing on turn one. And the first time I read it, I was like, what the fuck? How are you supposed to figure this out? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Now that I've been playing for a few years, it's really obvious. Oh, they played, you know, even just based on the fetch land, they play turn one. Once you've been playing for a while and you read those articles and you pay attention, like, you instantly will know, like, they're playing one of these three decks. And by the time they've played their first spell, you probably already know what deck they're playing. Mm-hmm. And in Legacy, that is an important skill to learn. But that doesn't mean you can't do well if you don't have it. The first two times I got top 64, which was yay, made some money, and was very exciting moments for me in Legacy, well, I didn't have that skill at all. I was just sitting there doing my thing. I'm sitting there playing Mud Post, being like, I don't give a shit what you do. I'm going to cast Emrakul and you're going to cry. and I mean,
Chris is like, I have been there.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, I play a hard cast Emrakul decks. Like, that's what I'm pretty well known for, I feel like, at this point. But I didn't get that. Like, I didn't understand if they played a turn one, you know, Underground Sea, what I was supposed to think. And long term, while that's a skill you definitely need to learn, like, short term, don't let that scare you away from Legacy, because you can do well without understanding that.
Well, I do want to bring it back to Women in Magic just really quickly. There were some stats tweeted out by MTG Diversity this past weekend. 20% of the judges at GP Stockholm were women, which Yay. Is fantastic. And then they also announced that, I have the same stat twice. I'm so bad at Twitter. Apparently 100% of the, one third of the SCG Baltimore judges, are women, including 100% of the Saturday team leads. So those are statistics that we like to see. That's fantastic. So I do want to touch on SCG Baltimore a little bit, because it was a little depressing. They said that 42% of the competition on day two was Bant Company.
What?
42%. Have we seen it? Was when Mono Black was dominant, when Mono Black Devotion was a thing, was it this bad? Like, I'm trying to remember when a deck was this dominant in Standard.
Well, when Mono Black was dominant, it was winning a lot, but I think the meta was pretty evenly split between, like, Mono Black, then there were people playing Mono Blue, and then there were people playing Esper Control, and then there were people trying to do anything else. So I don't think it was 42%.
Okay, so this is pretty unprecedented for Standard. So do you think that, Hallie, you know, do you think that we can expect something this weekend from the Pro Tour, or is this just going to be a Bant Pro Tour?
I don't think it's going to be a Bant Pro Tour. I mean, I think people are definitely going to play this deck, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see at least a couple copies in the top eight. But, I mean, this is week two of the format, and people are just trying to play what they think is good. And this is, you know, a very obvious deck to come out of Eldritch Moon. Like, it was a deck beforehand. It got some good upgrades, got Spell Queller, and, you know, it's very good right now, but I'm, looking forward to seeing a lot of innovation coming out of the pro camps. I know a lot of pros are going to be bringing some spicy decks. So I think we're going to see a lot more diversity and, you know, hopefully this top eight will be just as diverse as the top eight at the last pro tour.
Yeah, I was really surprised that Blue-White Tokens or Blue-White Spirits did really well last week, and we really didn't see it this week. I think it came in, the best it did was 28th, and that was only one copy in the top 32. And I really felt like that was a deck that could maybe give Bant a run for its money, and it doesn't seem like it really did that. There was a Bant Spirits deck in 21st. I want to bring up some of the spicy brews, because the hero of the weekend, I think, was Blue-Green Crush. Did you guys see this?
It looks sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those who don't know, it was four copies of Crush of Tentacles, Kiora, Nissa, Jace, Ishkana, Emrakul, Void Grafter, Noose Constrictor. It has some Delirium elements to it, but I think the point is really just to do Crush of Tentacles. Oath of Nissa, Pulse of Marasa. This deck was the hero of the weekend. Like, the Star City instituted this thing where you can vote on feature matches, and I think at one point there was the option of a Bant Mirror, and it got zero votes. Like, nobody wanted to watch it, but when this deck was on, people lit up and they were like, we want to see this deck. And from what I understand, this deck did quite well against Bant Company. So if cards weren't rotating next month, I would totally buy the Den Protectors and I would play this, because this looks like a lot of fun, just being able to crush the tentacles. And when he took his top eight picture, the pilot, Corey Dissinger, he posed with an octopus token. And I was like, you and I are going to be friends. I was like, I love everything that's happening here. And so everybody's rooting really hard for him. Black White Angel Control was also in the top eight. This seems to be an archetype that I've been seeing more of as well. It's basically Avacyn, Bruna, Gisela, Kalidus, Linvala, Thalia's Lancers, and eventually you get a Brisella and call it a day, with a bunch of kill spells, and that looks kind of fun. And then last but not least, I have to bring it up. In 18th place, a young man named Michael Lehman showed up with Esper Starfield.
I thought of you. I was like, Air's gonna be so happy.
I saw that it was X and 2, and I was like, there is a god, and she is kind. And so they're running Lunar Force, which is the blue enchantment counterspell, which you can bring back over and over again with Starfield. I mean, come on. Come on. And then Stasis Snare, Anguished Unmaking, Grasp of Darkness, Oath of Jace, Oath of Liliana. It's Visa. It's where I want to be. Chris and I are going to Regionals this weekend, and Regionals is standard, but after the third round, they're having a modern PPTQ. If that PPTQ wasn't happening, I would sleeve this thing up and go and just be like, sup. And this deck looks hella fun. I would totally play this. Modern is still healthy as ever. And, you know, I don't want to boast, but guess what won the modern event?
Dredge.
Yes. I had somebody tweet at me, and somebody started calling me their queen. I guess I'm the Dredge queen now. Somebody sent me a tweet, and they were like, as your humble servant, I should let you know that Dredge won the Modern Classic. And I was like,
I hope you know that both times I beat Dredge at SCG, I almost tweeted you an apology before I even said anything. Just saying, you are the Dredge queen.
Can we do that to a Fetty Wap beat? Can we do that? Like, she's the Dredge queen. That'd be dope. But no, so like the Modern Classic, Modern is very healthy. We got Temur, Delver, Dredge, Affinity, Kiki Cord, Burn, Zoo, Bant Retreat, two copies of Bant Retreat, Merfolk, five color Aggrol, Soul Sisters, 14th place, Infect, 15, Green Red Tron. Modern is fine. We have no complaints. Legacy, Grixis, Delver, you know, Kate, what do you think of the Legacy format so far? We talked about kind of getting into Legacy, but, you know, when you look at this classic results, is this a healthy format to you?
I'm sure anyone who's read my articles can predict my answer to this, because I've been writing about this a lot for over a year now. I think the Legacy format is currently extremely unhealthy. It's 20% miracles, and that's just looking at like MTG top 8. When you're sitting in a room, there is so much miracles no matter where you go. Too much. You know, I think that counterbalance needs to be banned like no tomorrow. You know, they banned Splinter Twin when it was hitting about 15%, talking about how it was stifling the meta. When it comes to blue-white miracles, it is way more oppressive than Twin ever was. you know, obviously it's different formats, but Twin was nothing to Modern compared to what Miracles is to Legacy, and it's hitting near 20%. Now, I don't think Sensei's Divining Top should be banned. Everyone's like, oh, but it gets activated so much. There's so many great decks that run Sensei's Divining Top that don't run to time and have the issues that Miracles does. Also, top isn't what actually makes Miracles oppressive. Counterbalance is definitely what makes Miracles oppressive. It shuts down decks like Elves, which is an affordable entry into Legacy. That deck can cost, you know, just a little over a grand if you are smart in your trading or buying. And is a great entry point, but it's really not a great deck right now because Miracles makes up so much of the room. In addition, top isn't what makes you need to respond to literally every single spell that gets played. Counterbalances, you know, I play a spell, counterbalance trigger, activate top, fetch, activate top, brainstorm, activate top, okay, resolve the counterbalance. And that's in response to every single spell. I think there's a big problem in Legacy, the fact that Wizards ignored it during this last banning, even though it's been 20% of the meta for almost a year now. To me, was like a big fuck you from Wizards, and I was really upset about that. This is an issue I've been discussing for a while, to the point where Aaron, my fiance, anyone who's not familiar with him, he writes a brew column for Hipsters of the Coast. He actually has been working on a counterbalance free Miracles deck just to prove the point that the deck doesn't need counterbalance. I think Legacy needs a strong control deck like Miracles, but it does not need counterbalance. Ban counterbalance.
You can vote for Kate Donnelly on her platform.
I'm probably the best option right now, let's be real.
So, Chris, I want to bring it back to you because you went to a PPTQ this past weekend, and I was going to go with you, but then circumstances didn't let me. And you went anyways, and it sounded interesting.
Yeah.
What had happened?
So I went to the PPTQ at a game store called The Gaming Goat. They have several locations scattered throughout, like, the greater Chicagoland area. And this particular one was in Oak Park. Trying to get registered for the event in and of itself was kind of, like, a weird experience even before I went down there, because I couldn't get through on the phone. Like, it had a weird, like, sort of voicemail system, and I was like, I'm kind of lost on this. I just want to register for this event. There were some details online, and, you know, I will talk about this after I give the whole thing about my feelings about PPTQs and certain types of stores, but I finally got registered. I went, and not that the store was not nice, and not that the people that were running the event were not wonderful, but it is a very small store. And I was kind of like, whoa, like, how are we going to fit all these people in here? Originally, the cap was 36. Then they changed it to 32. Then, in the midst of me filling out my deck list, they, number one, someone called out my name, was like, is Chris Schultz here? I'm like, right here. And I was like, do I have to come up there and sign the sign-in sheet? And they were just like, oh no, we got it. So that was kind of weird to have a sign-in sheet. Like, shouldn't you just tell me later that, like, here is the list of registered players, and then we're going to put pairings up? That would have made more sense to me personally, but to each their own, I guess. So that comes into play later, because when round one was posted, I was not on the list. And I was like, how am I not on the list? Like, but I said, and I was there, I'm confused. So then the store owner apologized to me, and he was like, you know, you'll have the buy. He's like, I'm really sorry about that. It's my fault. And I was like, but okay. So I had the buy. Now, thankfully, they were a Pokestop, so I literally sat outside and mined them for items, and that was fine. But it was very warm in there. They had the door open, a couple fans, but we were in two separate rooms, and we ended up being 40 people. And I was like, this is a...
They went over their cap?
Yep. Oh, yeah. They did. Because then, like, while we were all writing our deck list and just milling around, the store owner said, would anybody be opposed if we made it, I think, what do you say, 5 or 6 rounds? I forget which. And, like, people are, like, meekly raising their hand. But, yeah. So they ended up adding those people in, much to my dismay. And I was not very pleased about that because it's like, we already know you have a small space. You said the cap is at 32. Why are you going to increase it at the last minute? You already know we're dealing with a small space. So we had to kind of help move the tables and stuff and get everything organized. They brought out more chairs, but it was just very, I don't know. My anxiety was on 10. So it was, that was a little much. Then because I was like the only one standing because I had no place to sit because there was no space. The judge asked me to collect the deck lists for everyone.
What? Oh, God.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I guess this is practice. So I get everybody's deck lists together and give them to the store owner to give to the judge. And then I just kind of waited for the round to be done. Round two started and I finally got to play because I don't really care if it was like a free win or whatever you want to call it. I just want to play the damn deck. Like, I want to get practice in before Indy. So I ended up playing versus Mardu Tokens. I lost out of three. I had a very hard fought game too, where I was just able to kill him with, like, you know, a Valakut trigger at a time. And it was just kind of like not the most ideal of situations. I had kind of bad draws, which I was really disappointed in. Not quite sure if that's my mojo setting it off, or perhaps I need to resleeve my deck, shuffle better. Could be a lot of things. Round three, I played versus Kiki Combo. I lost out of two. I had very slow and bad draws, and I was just feeling kind of a little disheartened at that point. And I was like, I'm in this store that's really warm and really cramped, and there's a lot of people here, and I'm just getting some bad juju. So when round four was just about to start, I was going to be playing this kid who loved everything he was doing. He was on Mono Blue Tron. His sideboard just like, oh my God, I could have hugged him. Because I told him, I said, I don't know you, but I love you. It's like, you're running an Aetherize in the sideboard. I love you so much. This is so great. But I was like, I don't want to get sleeve or locked right now. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I was like, you know what? So I just conceded to him. He's like, oh, you don't want to play Magic the Gathering? I'm like, not right now, no. And it wasn't like, I wasn't like in a shitty mood or anything, but you know when you kind of just get that feeling that you should stop while you're ahead?
Oh, yeah.
That was just kind of where I was, because I was just like, you know, I'm having an all right day. I don't want it to go downhill. And I feel like I'm going to make it worse for myself because I already feel like this has all started out like on kind of a bad note. So I'm like, I'm just going to make a couple purchases while I'm here, do my little thing, talk to some people, and then I'm going to go home. So that is what I ended up doing. Like I said before, the guy who runs the store, super nice guy. Judge, I've seen him before around the area. Great. But I have a hard time with these stores that are holding these PPTQs that clearly cannot either A, stick to a cap, or B, cannot just accommodate the event in and of itself. It's just a lot to put the players through, to put the store through, you know, especially in summer, you know, at the end of July, it just seems like a bad idea. And it's stuff like this kind of makes me miss, you know, just regular PTQs. Because you knew those stores, those venues could support the people coming into them. And this was my first, like, negative experience with a PPTQ. And not to say I wouldn't necessarily go to an event there again, but I would hope that it was run a little better, a little more organized, and have them stick to the cap that they mean. Like, I have no concerns about the upcoming event with Nerd Rage. Not at all. They're going to be at the Wisconsin Center. It's a nice place. They seem like they have their shit together. Love them. So I have no concerns about that. But this just kind of felt like a bad scene from the get-go, which is unfortunate because I just really wanted to play Modern. But I wish it would have gone a little differently. But I was happy, though, that I got to play versus two matchups with Titan Shift that I had not previously played against, because people at my store don't really play them. So I was like, okay, you know, this is more practice. And that was the good thing that came out of a somewhat poor experience.
But didn't someone also recognize you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It was kind of a weird experience, and yeah. So the part that I omitted was that when I clarified that I was there and I raised my hand and I was like, right here, the girl that was sitting at the table next to me was like, and I was like, did she really gasp? Like, I can't even look at her right now because, like, I don't know. Like, did I imagine this? Am I insane? Like, do they recognize me from somewhere, from something? And I was like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. Now, I don't think she tried to say anything to me. I'm not sure. I promise I'm not like unapproachable. So if you're listening and you love the cast, you seem like a really awesome girl and you should say hi to me at an event next time because you seem like you're really dope. And she really did. She knew what she was talking about, loved her from afar. But yeah, and I even wore my girlfriend bracket t-shirt too. I was all like, I'm wearing a t-shirt with my face on it. That's kind of strange.
Can I buy those t-shirts? Where can I get one of those girlfriend bracket t-shirts? I want one.
Don't lie, Chris. Chris totally like went out the back to avoid the paparazzi. She was totally there. Like she had her dark sunglasses on. No pictures, please. Like the Hillary Clinton meme. She's like, I'm not, sorry.
Oh, people asked about you. They were like, where's Erin? And I was like, oh, she was going to come, but things. And I'm like, well, you're going, you know, next weekend, right? And they're just like, yeah. I'm like, oh, she'll be there and I'll be there. And everyone will be there. And, you know, that's another positive thing, I guess, that came out of it is you get to see people that you know and that you like in the community and get to swap stories. And I ran into my buddy that I met at the Nerd Rage event, like reintroduced ourselves to each other after like 15 plus years. And, you know, it was really cool to see him again. So, you know, gotta love events, if only to see people in a cramped room with lots and lots of heat. So, yeah. Hoping for good stuff this weekend.
When you mentioned the store that you went to, I had a negative experience at a Gaming Go. I don't think it was the same one, but this was back when Birthing Pod was standard legal. I was at a TCG event, and it was also a hot summer day. I think it was like a TCG diamond or, you know, gold event, whatever it was. But anyways, it was a hot summer day. And they decided they were going to have a barbecue for whatever reason. And so they had a grill behind the store. And so they were grilling like hot dogs and burgers and things like that. Because I think it was like 5 or 6 rounds. And so that was fine. But we were already so cramped as it was. And so you're already asses to elbows with the people around you. Now you're also having to like hold. So people are holding their plates with like one hand and then playing with the other hand because it's so cramped. You have no place to leave your plate. So we all look like servers who are playing Magic. And then they decided they were going to keep the doors open the whole time. So flies start to come in. Okay. So now you're cramped. You're holding your food with one hand. There's flies everywhere. It's really, really warm. It was a bad scene. And what killed it for me, and maybe, and like I said, it probably wasn't your store, and maybe that store has changed. I don't know. But I had bought some shit. I bought some sleeves, and I bought a box. And the young man working behind the counter was talking to his friend. I stood at that counter for a smooth 5 minutes. And I pulled out my phone and timed it, because I'm petty like that. 5 minutes. So the guy comes to help me. He rings up my purchase, and I say to him, can I have a bag, please? And you know what he says to me? He goes, do you need one?
I asked for it, damn it.
I asked for a bag, which indicates that I need a bag. And so he was like, so he begrudgingly gives me the bag. He licks his finger. He opens the bag. And I'm just like, so between the burgers and the bugs and the heat and the bag, I was just like, I'm over it. And I had not been, I've not been to a Gaming Goat store since then. I didn't realize that there were so many of them. So like I said, it probably wasn't your store because from the pictures you took, Chris, it didn't look at the same store. But when you had mentioned that things were iffy at a Gaming Goat location, all I could hear in my mind was, do you need a bag? Oh my God. And I was just like, oh, and so I wasn't surprised at that because I remember there being, you know, all the concerns that you said with the tight space and the heat and everything. That was an issue when I was there 3 or 4 years ago. And that's always so, you know, disappointing to me is when things like that happen.
Yeah. So you know what I've never understood? So Wizards, I work in LGS, so this is stuff that's in my face all the time, right? So I don't know if Aaron's
do you need a bag?
I ask everybody who brings stuff to my counter if they need a bag, and I never bitch if they need it. I am so pissed at that for you. But I don't know if people know this, but when you apply as an LGS to run things like at F&M's and events, you have to provide pictures of your store to prove that you're not a shithole. Right.
I didn't know
and
that.
I actually know a store that when they got, I knew the original owner, they got bought by someone I now know. I don't go to the store anymore, but when they took over, they were forced to update the store because Wizards wants it to be at a certain level to look nice enough, right? They don't want it. They literally don't want you to be playing at a shithole. Now, they don't make you update these pictures. So say like, I'm like, oh, look at this beautiful store. And then I let it fall apart. Like Wizards doesn't ask for updates, which is fair. They shouldn't have to babysit LGSs. But I'm really surprised, and I've always been really surprised by this, that they don't make you put in when you send these pictures in, oh, I can seat 36 people. So when they approve you, because I know for a fact that they're pretty picky, because I know people who have been rejected, you know, and had to repaint and reapply, which they were eventually approved, but they had to show they weren't a shithole.
I love that we keep coming back to that phrase.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, that they had that, you know, you have to be like, oh, I can fit 36 people in here. You know, and if you want to increase that number, then you just need to send them another picture and be like, hey, look at this is what I did to make space for another table. And that word doesn't just limit you like, oh, you know, I told Wizards I can fit 36 people. So when I log into Wur and try to put in a 40 person event, it won't let me because Wizards knows I can only fit 36 people. And I always found it really weird because I keep hearing these stories of overcrowded, and I know it's going to be different with things like Walter, where you're having, which is for people who don't know, Wur is what you use to run things like FNM and PPTQs, and Walter is what you use to run really big events like a, you know, an SCG or a GP, right? Mm-hmm. So I understand why Walter doesn't work that way, but why Wur doesn't work that way, or why Wizards doesn't at least have like checks in place that limits the amount of places, amount of seats a store can sell for events is really odd to me because they're so picky about how nice things have to work. Why can't they also be equally picky about having like 60 fucking people at a store that can fit 20? Because let's be real, that's the worst.
Yeah. I am definitely not down with that. I think it was on Hipsters once, like what, 2 years ago or something, where there was.
Yeah, the one with like the leaky pipes and exposed pipes.
And like, oh, yeah, you had to go through the alley and go down the stairs into like that like weird basement. And I was like, nope. I never would have gone down there.
I mean, the store I was just talking about, I don't play there anymore, not because of where it's located, but it's literally in the basement of an apartment building in like a really sketchy town, and it is like not the nicest area.
Wow.
Like the not just like where it's located in town, but I mean like the room within itself. It's literally like a all cement basement with like a creepy bathroom that always smells like pot.
No thanks.
So
that,
it's
are
like
you sure that's just not the air freshener? Like, are you sure it's not the breeze they have? Where it's like maybe they couldn't get like, you know, Malaysian mango or Hawaiian hibiscus. They just got pot, and that's just
some good old Mary Jane. You know what? Like, whatever, to each their own. But it's just real. I mean, that's not why I don't go back there anymore. But like, damn, like it's, I don't even think it's that. It's above that is an apartment building that sometimes floods. I literally think it's the upstairs neighbors just like smoking a shit ton of weed in their bathroom.
God, that sounds
but
awful.
Like I just want to go play Magic. It's a really weird store, to put it like
that. Really seems like just the moral of this episode is I just want to play Magic.
Just
like,
want to play Magic, not in a shithole.
Right. You know,
while my opponent respects me.
Exactly.
This is our
Are
list
we
of demands.
For too much?
I think that's a good way to cap out the show. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you all, how can they find you and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Snapchat at HalCanSan and on twitch.tv/HalCanSan.
Kate, you want to go?
Sure. Sorry. I know I'm out of order. So, if anyone wants to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My handle's in French, so I'm sorry. It's Beautcolisses. It's BEAUTECOULISSES. I was a weird high school kid. It's not my fault. Or you can find me on Instagram or, Twitter with, or Instagram or Snapchat with K Donnelly, 278, K D O N N E L L Y 278.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is @THKRIZ. My Gmail is thkrizy@gmail.com. I have a Snapchat that I update pretty poorly. I'm hoping to change that. It's Cryptic Command with K's. And I also have a blog that I'm hoping to update, I hope, within the next 2 weeks. And it's backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. And I think that's all my stuff. I don't remember.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com, Snapchat OriginalEstrus, Twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. You can find the show on Twitter at TheGFBracket, Twitch.tv/TheGFBracket. Gathering Magic every Friday, Patreon.com/TheGirlFromBracket if you would like to support us. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been a joy talking to you, and hopefully we get to run into you at an event sometime.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And here anytime you guys want to talk, because this was so much fun.
And Katie should be back with us next week. We'll have the gang back together. Thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.